This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, fantasy author publishing under JMD Reed. My first series collection is out. The first three books of The Storm Below are gathered in one awesome bundle. When Ari and Shailen are drafted into the Autonomy's Navy, their love is stressed to the breaking. Assassins, dark gods, and demonic storm riders shine all they hold dear. Today, I'm joined by Scott Kimack. He's the author of the post-apocalyptic thriller, I Call Him, Him. How are you doing today, Scott?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for asking me to do this.
Yeah. Now we got our technical difficulties up because, you know, Windows 10 works perfectly, doesn't it? Unless you're on not Windows 10, but
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, anyways, I always like to start these interviews off the fun question or two. So, Scott, what is your favorite color?
My favorite color? Oh, wow. I guess black.
Okay. Yeah, that's an interesting color. Any reason?
Well, I've studied the martial arts my whole life, and so I have several black belts. So I guess that was always kind of a goal as a kid to reach the black belt. I guess it was always kind of stuck in my head that black was something to, you know, try to get to that point. So I guess it became my favorite color.
Okay. What martial arts?
Mainly Kung Fu, Chinese Kung Fu. But I've also studied Jiu Jitsu, Taekwondo, Karate, Tai Chi, quite a few different ones.
Okay. Does any of that make it into your writing?
Oh yeah, definitely. Tons of it. That's what really what it's all about. Tons of martial arts, lots of fighting, you know, lots of sword play. So yeah.
Yeah. I learned how to rapier fence when I was in high school.
Oh, awesome.
And so that taught me a lot about like feet position and how you have to move your feet when you're fighting with a sword, especially the rapier, because you want to keep your point on your target, and you want to keep your body turned to the side so it's like harder for them to hit you.
Definitely.
So yeah, so it helps for writing fight scenes when you at least understand like how footwork is and how it it seems weird until you understand why, like, you do your footwork the way you do, so you don't, like, trip yourself.
Right.
Yeah. So, how long have you wanted to be a writer, Scott?
Well, it's kind of a strange story. I only started writing 2 years ago. I'm 53. I started writing a couple of years ago. I was 51. But I've actually had this story in my head for this trilogy for almost 40 years. When I was like 13, I started writing it, and I don't have those original pages, so I think I only wrote like the first couple pages. And at the time, I was already studying martial arts, and I took it to my kung fu teacher, and I said, you know, and I looked up to him like he was, you know, king of the world, which I found out later on it was a big mistake. But anyway, you know, imagine Cobra Kai, kind of, you know, John Kreese. Well, that was kind of like my first teacher. So, yeah, wasn't the best guy in the world. But anyway, I took it to him and you know, was all proud. And I showed him the first couple pages and he just laughed at it. And he said, stop wasting your time on this. He says, just focus on Kung Fu. And it just kind of destroyed my, you know, ever trying to write again. So I never tried, you know, picking up the pen again until just 2 years ago. And then all of a sudden, one day I just said, you know what, I'm going to try to write that story that I've had in my head all these years, ever since I was a kid. And I started writing, and it just wouldn't stop coming. And now I'm just obsessed with writing. That's all I can think about doing.
Awesome. Yeah. So let's talk about this book. It's called I Call Him, Him. So let's talk about him and Angelica and who they are and what makes them tick and what the story's all about.
Okay. Well, it's a post-apocalyptic future, after a nuclear war, everything has been pretty much destroyed and wiped out. And years later, you know, when people try to return, the survivors that, you know, that stayed underground in bomb shelters or whatever, try to come, you know, back to the surface, Well, they realize that the world is, you know, has been taken over by this, like, evil presence now. And basically, any of the survivors are, you know, turned into slaves. There's basically this demon race now that controls the planet. So this main character, well, the reason, I know that the title is kind of unusual, I call him, is that no one really knows his name. He's this, you know, unnamed warrior. He never speaks, you know, so it's, you know, people just refer to him. If they look at him, they say, oh, yeah, that's him over there, you know. So, so that's why nobody really knows, you know, what to call him.
But, yeah, no, I get that. It's like some like a Western archetype there.
Yeah, yeah, kind of like, oh my gosh, what's the movie that Clint Eastwood?
The Man with No Name?
I
feel like that's what it is. I'm not exactly up on the spaghetti westerns, but I don't remember
which one specifically, but anyway, so it's kind of a little bit like that. And well, he's, you know, set on this quest for vengeance, for revenge, and that's all he's thought about. He's just turned into this killing machine. That's all he has, you know, left inside of him. And so, you know, he's just traveling to these wastelands and trying to, you know, find these people that committed these atrocities on his family. And as he's going through this, though, he's going to meet this little girl, okay? And I don't want to talk too much, but there's something very special about this girl. And so it's going to start, you know, to change him. And it's almost at the point, like, has he gone so far that he can't return, you know, has he become so dark and so full of death that he can't return from, you know, and come back to what he was before, you know? So it's kind of like, is he saving her, or is she really the one that's trying to save him, you know, from losing his soul? So, it's just packed with, you know, of course, being a martial artist, it's got all kinds of martial arts fighting and sword play and some very diverse characters. I have a Shaolin monk that plays a part in it. There's Hispanic characters, and, you know, it's really a good, I have a lot of different races that are kind of involved in this, which is good that they're all coming together on, you know, the fight against evil, which I think is something that really, you know, today with all of the things that are going on with, you know, racism and so forth in our country, that, you know, it shows that we can all join together and fight against, you know, something, you know, instead the battle be against good versus evil rather than race versus race. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, I do. Yeah. Can we just stop right real quick here, Kelly? Scott, your audio sometimes gets muffled. Are you moving your phone around?
Oh, no, not really.
Okay. It's weird. It sounds like it's really clear, then it gets like muffled, and then it gets really clear again. So I was just wondering if you were moving it around. You're still pretty much understandable, but I just, if there's anything you could change on your end.
Oh, okay. I'm holding my phone, so let me put it up against something. Maybe. That is, let me do this. Okay, can you still hear me now? There's my computer. I opened it up.
Call from earlier. Hold on. Yeah, I gotcha.
Sorry about that.
Okay.
You're still there, right?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
Yeah, it didn't mess us up on our end.
Okay, all right. Okay, I've got the phone in one spot now, so it shouldn't be moving.
Okay, you sound good right now. Okay, Kelly, we're going to resume now. So is, you know, dealing with the issue of racism something that's important to you in your writing?
Yeah, you know, definitely. I'm Caucasian, but my wife is Mexican. My best friend growing up as a kid is Cuban, you know. So, I mean, I live in southern Texas, which is like 98% Hispanic down here. I think it's very important that, you know, we try to get over this, you know, which is dividing our nation and bring people together. You know, I think there's more important things, and that's what I kind of want to, I think, show in this book too, that, you know, there's the fight of good versus evil. That's what's really the important thing, you know, that we should be fighting against, you know? So, I mean, that's what I kind of wanted to show when I wrote this story.
Yeah, yeah. What part of Texas exactly?
I'm from Harlingen, Texas. It's down by South Padre Island. I mean, I'm like way down at the very by Brownsville.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know Texas that well, so I understand where you're at. You're down at the I'm picturing Texas in my head.
I'm as far south as you can go in the United States.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, I used to live in New Mexico, so like I do get that.
Okay.
Yeah. Because Alamogordo, but yeah. So why post-apocalyptic?
Well, I don't know. It was just I always had that story in my head. I guess as a kid also, I went to a Catholic, private school. And so, you know, it was kind of drilled in our heads every day, you know, stories of the Bible and you know, revelations and the, you know, the end of the world coming and good versus evil and kind of that stuff. So I think that kind of had, you know, a little bit of it, you know, this final apocalyptic battle of good versus evil that, you know, was always kind of programmed into my head a little bit. So I guess that's why I came up with the story when I was a child, and I was just always big into, reading when I was a kid and superheroes and, I grew up reading Edgar Rice Burroughs and you know, the stories of Tarzan and John Carter of Mars and all those stories. And you know, so there was always this, good versus evil thing going on. I guess that's why, I guess it was more of a some of the religious background I had. Yeah, I had that. I wanted to do that, that story, that post-apocalyptic story.
OK. Do you like other post-apocalyptic literature or movies or anything like that?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I love them. I read Kyla Stone, quite a few of her novels, like movies. Oh my gosh, The Book of Eli.
Yeah, that's a great movie. I like that movie. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great movie. And actually, it has a little bit of that, religious story to it also in it.
Yeah, it reminded me of like A Canticle for Leibowitz in a way.
The what?
A Canticle for Leibowitz.
Oh yes, okay. So but anyway, yeah, that's I guess that's why I went with post-apocalyptic. I think it's just from my background as a child. That's probably what pushed me towards that direction.
Okay. So were there any like challenges in writing it? I mean, it was your first novel, so did you like learn any lessons or make any big mistakes?
I think one of the things that was a little difficult at first is when you're doing post-apocalyptic is the lack of color, because everything's dead, basically.
All right, yeah.
So, okay. So sometimes I found that a little challenging, at first. It's like, you don't have all the vibrant colors and hues and so forth that you would have, in our modern world, So sometimes that was a little bit difficult, but I think I managed through it.
Yeah, I wrote a novel where most of the book takes place in absolute darkness.
Oh, yes.
That was smells. I had to use a lot of smells. And since the place has been in like darkness for 10 years, it's all rotting and decayed. So it wasn't pleasant smells, but it's all I had.
Right.
For like smells and sounds and like the feel of the air on their skin.
Yeah, and I have some of that too in my stories, because there's still groups of people that like live underground and so forth, and so sometimes when you go down there, the ones that are above, they can't see when you go down, but yet the people living underground have lived underground so long they've grown adapted to it. So I know what you mean. Yeah, so you have to use a lot of touch and smell and so forth.
Okay. And so are you like a plotter or a pantser?
I think I'm a little bit of both, but probably more of a pantser. I have a main skeleton that I've created.
Okay.
But then as I start to write, sometimes things will just jump into my mind and just kind of go off in different directions. So I'll just kind of create as I'm going along sometimes. I almost feel like, I get so involved in it that I feel like I become the characters and they just kind of take over sometimes, and then they just lead me in different ways, and so I'll just kind of flow with it and go with it, and just try to imagine, like, you know, if I got in this certain situation, you know, how would I get out of it and so forth. And, you know, yeah, so I don't know. I'm probably, 20%, you know, that I have it planned ahead of time, but the rest is kind of, I'm winging it as I go.
Okay. That's, yeah, so you're pretty well on the pantser side of things.
Yeah.
At least you have a goal. Even pantsers need to have a goal, or they're really, you know. I mean, I've written stories where I wasn't quite sure how I wanted to end it before. Like, I couldn't quite see the ending, or it was very nebulous until I kind of got up to it and kind of, you know, you have a lot of options. Like, a story is like, you have a lot of options, and you're constantly making choices that narrow down things until you finally choose a path. And sometimes, you know, you leave yourself open for multiple paths as long as you can or something, and then you have to decide, well, I gotta, you know, make that decision, you know, how is this, like, going to fall out? And, yeah, it's always a little, sometimes it can be a little intimidating because you're not quite sure. At least I always do. I always worry, like, in the middle of a book, I'm always worried, like, it's not going to work.
Yeah. I mean, there's been some things I've changed around to as I'm, you know, as I'm going along. It's like, okay, I thought I was going to do this, but no, maybe not.
So you have the first book out. Is this any other books in the series out? Are you?
Yeah, the second book, Angel of Death, is it's available for pre-order. I've already finished it, but it doesn't launch until May 6th.
So, okay.
But that one's all done. It's all ready to go. I mean, I've been sending it out, you know, for people to do some early reviews on it. Cool. And then the third book I'm writing, I'm probably about 60% done that one right now. So I'm hoping by the summer I should have it all finished.
So, like, finished by, like, all edited or finished by all just written?
Well, I don't know. We'll see. My schedule is kind of crazy. I'm a school teacher.
Okay.
You know, so during the day, and then I teach martial arts at night. So, so I'm pretty busy. So it's hard to find a lot of time to write. I mainly write on the weekends or whatever, yeah. I can. And, you know, during lunchtime.
I got you.
But the summers I have off, you know, because I'm a school teacher, so I have a ton of time off in the summer. So that's usually when I can get quite a bit done. So I guess it just depends on how things go. But, you know, but I'm hoping, yeah, by the summer I should be able to pound everything out and have it ready.
So what grades do you teach or subjects?
I teach 12th grade. I teach government, and I also teach psychology.
Okay, so you teach like civics then, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So that's like my 12th grade, we had to take our civics. I don't remember much about that class, though. I think I didn't pay much attention. I was my senior year of high school, I took a bunch of computer classes, and I mean, I spent 2 hours a day at school playing video games. So it wasn't a very... Yeah, we... don't ask me how. This was 99, and we had... there was this class called Computer Networking. And you were able to take it for both periods, and it was back-to-back. Don't ask me why they let us take it as a double class. I've never seen any other class offered by my high school that lets you do this. But we could. And so we did, because, you know, we're in our senior year, so we had most of our, you know, required credits done. So it was really just filling out with, like, electives, you know.
Right.
And the teacher, he tried to teach us stuff, but then he realized we're just a bunch of computer geeks that already knew all this stuff. And so he just sat in the corner and drank scotch. He was like on his last year of teaching, and he did not care. And so we just like networked these computers together, these old like, these old like 386s or 486s they had like token ring cards, and we had to adapt them to an Ethernet router. And then we just played like Quake or Duke Nukem 3D for 2 hours. But we had to work. We had to work every day to get those computers to network, because every day at all, it we had to finagle them for like 15 minutes. So we did have to practice computer networking.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, so that was my senior year. That's what I mostly remember about it.
Yeah, it's hard to get the 12th graders motivated, because, you know, they're thinking about getting out of there and about prom and all that kinds of stuff, you know. Well, then again, this year, though, I don't even know if we'll have a prom. I mean, you know, with
yeah,
COVID.
We had to do our senior project, so that was a big thing, like, that was kind of done in, like, through like the English classes and a few others. So you had to work on like your, that's actually how I got into rapier fencing. So like you had to do like you had to write a paper on a subject and you had to do like some sort of activity, and it could be like educational or volunteering. But anyways, like, you know, learning to fight with a rapier counted. So I was like, it was a lot of fun. Yeah. And then I got to bring a weapons to school because this was, you know, 99 before Columbine. So this is right before Columbine, right? When I would get my senior thing. So like, yeah, they didn't have a problem with me walking around school with like fake swords and stuff. Yeah. I don't even think I asked permission. I just showed up with them and no one cared.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, oh, it was the '90s and it was a, you know, it was a very suburban, I think it was like, my school was like 90% white. And, so it was a very low crime area. So yeah, there wasn't, you know, those other issues like if I was in Tacoma or something. But yeah, it was fun. Well, anyways, Scott, where can our listeners find you on the internet?
Okay. Well, as far as you mean, like social media or?
Yeah. Where can they connect with you? You know, check out your books and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, as far as, you know, okay, well, finding my books, you know, they're available on, the first book is available on Amazon, it's on Smashwords, it's on Apple, oh my gosh, where else do I have it? Barnes & Noble, Kobo, okay, yeah. So that's available on all those. The second book for pre-order is only available on Amazon. Now, as far as social media, then, yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, and it's real simple. It's just my name, Scott Kimack.
Awesome. Well, it was really great talking with you, Scott.
All right. Well, it was great. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Have yourself a good day.
All right. You too.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com, and follow me on Twitter at jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.